Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonya Rappaport.
Sonya, we are in Season 3 of X-Men Evolution, Episode 6, an episode called Extreme Measures. Another interesting episode here. I'm quite excited to talk about it, but before we do, let's get the plugs out of the way. You can follow me on Twitter, at Willie Simpson. Join the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group on Facebook. And most importantly, rate and review the show 5 stars on iTunes. Again, we will not be soliciting donations, money, Patreons, any of that stuff, advertisements. If you want to support the show, you like us, you've been with us the whole journey, or you just starting with us, the best way to support us is just take 2 minutes out of your day and leave a nice little 5-star review for us on iTunes.
And if you don't like us or want to support us, just don't do anything and you don't have to listen to our show anymore.
Yeah, exactly. We're not asking anything of you. So, like, if you're not in love with the show, don't bother wasting 2 minutes of your time writing a negative review. Sonya, before we start talking about X-Men Evolution, I do want to continue our discussion of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. A new episode again dropped on Friday. We're recording this on Saturday. What were your thoughts thus far?
I'm trying so hard to like this show and I just don't care that much about it. Like, we keep watching it every week, you know, I'll like kind of watch it while I'm like making a sandwich or something.
Are you gonna meet a point where you're not just gonna watch a Disney show if you don't like a Marvel Disney show?
It's like the runs are so short. This is only 6 episodes,
right?
And so now we're 4 in and we're it's more than halfway, so I've felt like I want to give it a chance and go in with an open mind. And also, I kind of want to know what happens continuity wise because
you watch
everything,
all the movies.
Yeah, everything builds on each other, so it's good to just kind of know what happens. But I'm not riveted by this show by any means. I think like the weakest part really is the relationship between Bucky and Sam,
right,
which we've talked about in previous episodes. I don't really see the connection there, and I don't care that much about what it is that they're doing in this show, honestly.
It's kind of, they keep having this thing, it's like, we're not friends, we're not partners, but then they clearly are friends,
they
are partners. And then it's kind of like they trust each other, so, and they're on the same wavelength, so, it doesn't seem like there's much meat on the bone there.
I do like the Baron Zemo stuff that they've been doing in the show. I think that actor is doing a great job.
Yeah.
I know his name.
Daniel Brühl.
Oh, yeah.
He's great. He's legitimately captivating. He's a great actor. The John Walker stuff is good, too. The evil Captain America, U.S. agent, whatever you want to call him.
Mm-hmm.
That's compelling. I mean, you made a very good point to me while we were watching it. Spoilers for the last 10 seconds of the show. when he's about to decapitate a guy, you said, oh, this is The Boys.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, this is just Marvel sticking their toe in some Boys territory, which The Boys obviously like goes like way more extreme and way more hard. Like, I said he was about to decapitate that guy. He doesn't. He slams his shield into the man's chest until he dies.
But they don't really show what happens, like, at the very end.
Well, the guy's dead.
Yeah, and he's all, like, covered in blood and stuff
The
like
shield
that.
Is in blood, which is a pretty cool image.
It's just... The Boys is a satire, right?
Yeah.
It's like supposed to be totally over the top, and this isn't supposed to be a satire.
This is taking superhero content very seriously, as well as their do-goodery and things like that. It's not...
And now this guy has a dark edge or whatever. He's gonna
be
the villain.
Well, he's technically a bad guy. I mean, you know, like in the comics, he's like a troubled character. He's not entirely bad, I think, from my remembering of the comics. He's just like doesn't have a good personality and does questionable things, and he gets redeemed maybe at some point, but he's not good like Captain America. He's no Steve Rogers.
Right.
So the show is exploring that. I mean, I think it's an interesting character. I think like that's sort of the most interesting plot of the show. But I mean, he's not the heart of the show. The heart of the show is Bucky and Sam, and they're just kind of boring.
Well, the other villain that they have at the, I guess, heart of the show is Carly, right? And her, like, revolutionary team.
They say her name certainly a lot.
A lot.
Carly Morgenthau.
Right. And, you know, we're, like, getting some glimpses into her personality. Sometimes they try to humanize her and show, like, these are displaced people that she represents.
She's a radical revolutionary terrorist, and she doesn't think she's a terrorist, but she kind of clearly is.
Yeah. I just think the whole thing with they keep talking about displaced people, and I'm like, is it supposed to be an allegory for what's going on in the real world in terms of like
mass
immigration, migration?
I think Marvel, it's like the classic Marvel Disney thing where they take a sort of a worldly issue, like in this case, like refugees, and they're trying to put their little spin on it in
a
very
don't
politically
like the way
correct
it's
way.
Done because it like. the X-Men, yeah. Just to go back to the X-Men, right? They're an allegory for all kinds of, like, marginalized people in general. But they're the good guys, right? Like, they're...
Well, the X-Men, not all mutants are good.
No, not all mutants are good. But, like, there's both sides of it. Yeah. And here it's really like Carly and her displaced people are really the bad guys. And what does that say about, like...
Well, they try to put some more subtlety into it. They say that, you know, the people she represents are, they're really have a, you know, they're really having a tough time in life. And
yeah, I know. And they show, like, the sweet children in the street and stuff.
And Sam says, I agree with everything you're saying. Like, you're not wrong. You just can't be killing people. So, I mean, it's one of these shows. The problem I have, I've seen this plot line before where the good guy, I mean, the bad guy has a good cause, but because they just happen to murder people who get in their way, they're, like, the superhero has to stop them on that principle alone.
Right.
Which is kind of, I mean, yeah, but... It just feels like a bit of a retread of like some kind of morality that's not that interesting to me, like a morality lesson.
I mean, the morality lesson with all of those plot lines, because as you said, they've popped up in a lot of different places before, is like, where do you draw the line is supposed to be what's interesting about it. But it's like the you Magneto draw the line thing. At killing.
Right, yeah.
Like, you that's can't, the answer that these shows always come around to.
Indiscriminately killing people.
Right.
As we mentioned, the John Walker guy, kind of interesting. I like the recent Baron Zemo is interesting too, for me anyway. In addition to the fact that Daniel Brühl's a great actor, I feel like he's in a weird way. His whole philosophy is setting up the idea he hates super soldiers. He hates all sort of super powered people. He thinks they represent some sort of worldwide supremacy and they're not, you know, to the natural order. And as you start to say these things out loud, you realize you could be talking about mutants.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like he's sort of at the vanguard, at the frontier of a future mutant hysteria that might grip the world.
Mm.
An attitude in the world philosophy of the Marvel Universe where they're like, wait, we're actually tired and sick of these superpowered people. And people like Baron Zemo are right. Like, we just have to get rid of them. You know, they can't – they're disrupting – just like the way of things, and they're too dangerous, and it's just, it's crazy that they exist.
Okay, so you think he's like a little bit of foreshadowing for what's coming later?
I think very lightly that he is a bit of foreshadowing, like maybe not directly, but I think maybe in 5 years when we get some kind of X-Men content, they're going to reference like, you know, 5 years ago, Baron Zemo started this crusade. He was right.
Against super soldiers.
Right, yeah, he knew. So I think it's like, I think there's a drop of that element there. That he represents a mindset that is going to become a future, like, Marvel Universe issue, which is cool. I mean, I appreciate that. But overall, you're right. It's like, it's just kind of not that interesting of a show. A little bit of diminishing returns here. It's
not over yet. You know, there's only two episodes left, so obviously, like, with these short runs, like I said, you, even if I'm not totally gripped by it, like, I'll just watch to see what happens, and maybe it'll win us over by the very end, you know?
I mean, they said that they film these things like movies, right? They did full cinematic productions on these TV shows, and I'm trying to think, like, I know it would be a six-hour movie, but, so that's not... Or,
Snyder
Cut. Right, yeah. Snyder Cut plus two. Excuse me. It doesn't feel like a good Marvel movie to me up to this point.
Yeah.
Even if they boiled it down to 2.5 hours and edited out a lot of stuff, it just doesn't seem that interesting, so...
But here we are in the third act, right? Like, WandaVision was great until the very, like, end of it.
The last two.
Like, that was a real turning point, so maybe this will go the other way. Who knows?
It could, yeah. I mean, I'm sure they're gonna... Whatever tricks they have, they'll pull them out of their sleeves for the last two.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see how effective they are. I mean, like I said, like, they sort of got me by the end with the John Walker stuff, because that is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, again, there's just a bit too much of generic storytelling that relies on tropes that are kind of hackneyed. For instance, you could tell a mile away that John Walker's buddy there, Battlestar, was going to get killed. And he's sort of the only one that believed in him. He was his best friend. He sort of kept him grounded because there's something crazy about this man underneath the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Bucky sort of recognized it, too. He sensed that this man is not well. And I don't know, just about, like, killing the best, like, your best friend who's a black guy just feels a bit like that's just, like, how many times are we going to go to this well in Hollywood, too?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess it's just more about... It's like, really, they're trying to mirror the Captain America story where he loses Bucky, but Steve Rogers, it doesn't make him into a lunatic. It just sort of, like, increases his resolve and makes him more of a hero.
Mm-hmm.
And then, whereas this guy, like, he loses his version of Bucky, and he jumps off the deep end.
Right.
And he takes the super soldier serum, so now he's got the powers of Captain America.
Right. And that's why they had to make a point of saying, like, nobody who's taken the super soldier serum has ever been, like, successful with it except for Steve Jobs.
Right. Steve's the only one
Steve
who...
Steve Rogers.
Yeah. Like, Steve Jobs, Steve Rogers.
Same thing. Yeah, like, I also
that's
felt
kind
like,
of interesting. I mean, like, this
really,
is why...
I thought that was such, like, a shoehorned-in sort of thing to say. Like, well, here's like a here's a Marvel rule we're going to just, like, lay down for you so you know. Anyone who takes the super serum is going to go insane.
Right,
except
well,
Steve Rogers.
I
He's
mean,
an angel.
I thought maybe that it was going to be this weird thing where if the people that take the serum and they go insane, they their skin falls off, like the Red Skull. Because that was in the first movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that he took the serum, too, and it just caused him to look like a... disgusting like demon creature. Right, yeah. So I mean, I guess it's not quite the case, but it's still the fundamental thing is that you need a good personality. You can't be corrupted inside if you're going to take the super soldier serum.
Uh-huh. So that means that everyone else is corrupted inside.
Well, Bucky's not.
Right, yeah.
I mean, he was horribly brainwashed and everything. Uh-huh. But he has the same sort of morals like heart as Steve Rogers does.
Were you happy to see the Wakandan army in this episode?
Oh yeah, that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I thought that was cool too. I liked how they showed up, and I didn't love that they had to have like that fight sequence amongst them. I thought that was one of those things where it's like you just
see John Walker was good. He was a good character because after he gets his ass kicked by them, he says there weren't even super soldiers, and I lost.
Right.
So he's obviously
he sheds a tear on the inside.
Right. So part of his biggest challenge is that he feels he's an inadequate person despite and right. He talks to his friend too before his friend dies about like, oh, I won 3 medals of honor, but you know what really happened over there.
I just didn't like that Sam and Bucky had to get involved in that fight with them, you know, like Zemo kind of slips out, and like that moment where Sam and Bucky are like watching them fight,
yeah,
and they're like, oh, I guess we have to do something about this, and like right. Back up.
They seem kind of jerky in a way for not they could have tried a little harder too to reach out to this, if they suspected something is wrong with John Walker,
yeah.
They needed to have some kind of a sit down with him and like air it all out and say like, listen, it's hard to be Captain America. We get it. Like we are like actually awesome fucking Avengers who saved the world,
right.
And you don't know what you're in for. And like we can help you, but you got to take our lead. Like they could have, but instead most of the time they're just sort of very dismissive of him. They don't respect him at all.
Right.
He senses
they just
the
kind
disrespect.
Of ignore him.
Yeah, they ignore
and it,
him.
Like fuels the fire.
Right. So they kind of like contribute a bit to his like crazy wild gun behavior.
But also Bucky like. Wakanda took you in and like nursed you back to health and life.
Right, and you free like, one of their greatest villains.
Right, yeah, like that's messed up.
Well, he's like Steve Rogers in the sense that he always feels like he has to do what's right to sort of a means to an ends kind of. I don't know. I mean, maybe that is a little. I don't know if Steve would have that attitude. It's difficult to say. I mean, there's a bit of Bucky's a little hard to define, and I don't think the show's done a great job of laying out what his character really is supposed to be.
Yeah. Well, I think they've laid out that he doesn't know who his character is really supposed to be.
Yeah, he's a bit lost.
Kinda, yeah, right.
Which is understandable, but they haven't like done much
to
square that circle.
It's kind of amorphous for us to watch.
We got to see how the show concludes, I guess, even though we're not like super thrilled with it. But I think like it hasn't been. I don't think people have been taken away with it as they were with WandaVision.
Yeah.
And again, and I think WandaVision ended with a dud too, so I think that's still in a taste in people's mouths. People have been talking a lot too before we move on to X-Men Evolution about the Loki trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch it?
No.
All right, so they released a new trailer. It does look kind of cool. I don't know. My Owen Wilson being in the show takes me out of it a bit.
Distracting.
A little distracting. I enjoy Owen Wilson. I think he's obviously had like some great movies and some like dumb ones.
I know he's been in a million things, but I just picture him in Zoolander every time I see him. I don't know why
that's one of his better. I would say that's one of his funnier comedy roles.
Yeah, he's great in it. He's so silly.
I mean, he's been in way more highbrow stuff. You know, he's obviously like Wes Anderson's friend. That's how he got him and his
yeah,
brother.
I know, but even in those, he's kind of silly.
He is. I mean, you know, Midnight in Paris is like maybe his sort of. I mean, that I don't know.
Yeah.
But he kind of played like he's always. Playing sort of the same note of affable, goofy man
mm-hmm.
that's just like a handsome Texas boy or something. We'll see how Loki is. Again, I'm not personally not too thrilled about it. He's like a time cop.
Yeah.
Reminds me of just sort of late era Star Trek in every sort of Star Trek series, they'd get a visitor from the future who was in future Star Trek.
Right.
From, like, 1,000 years beyond even the next generation.
And they have to, like, come back and do something to save the future.
Right.
But it's distasteful to the people in the present for some
reason. Yeah, the whole plot of that is always that in the future, they're the time police. That's what happens to the Federation.
Right.
And so that the time police have to always fix the timeline. So it has vibes of that to me, which weren't always my favorite Star Treks. We'll see. I don't know. Maybe it'll be...
I'm more excited about Loki than I was about Winter Soldier.
I'm waiting for, like, the ones that aren't going to be coming out for a while. Like, She-Hulk specifically. And Moon Knight, because I just don't know much about Moon Knight.
Yeah.
And that's Oscar Isaac, I guess. Mm-hmm. Which, he's good.
Yeah.
But She-Hulk, that actress, Tatiana Maslany, I'm not sure how to pronounce her name exactly, but she's a really good actress. And I just think She-Hulk will be interesting.
Okay.
Anyway... let's move on to X-Men Evolution here. Episode 6, Extreme Measures, spelled X-T-R-E-M-E.
Mm-hmm.
Not my favorite spelling of extreme. I feel like, and you know, the show came out in season 3 of X-Men Evolution, I guess it's around 2002.
Is this like the height of like extreme sports drinks?
Extreme culture at the time. I think if you were a teenager like we were in the early 2000s, just the whole extreme aesthetic was not my favorite.
Uh-huh.
I was... looking for a different time to associate myself. I was like, the present sucks.
Yeah.
Everything is lame and stupid. I was more backwards looking to the 60s or something. I thought that was the cool era.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's all... In a way, too, like, those kind of tastes are sort of... they sort of, like, market... There's a market for all seasons, for all different types of teenagers, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Anyway, extreme was definitely a buzzword of the time, so...
Were you much of an extreme sports watcher?
No.
The X Games?
No, come on.
Skateboard? I don't know. I mean, what? I mean, there's lots of people generally like
it. I'm not saying
like
it's
it.
Bad. If people like it, you like it.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, you stuff
know
is...
Me.
It's hard to... Right. yeah, go on.
All right.
So, I mean, yeah, we've criticized the show and Spike in particular for being like a Poochie-like character. He's a skateboarding, cool basketball-playing guy who is into being like a hard ass.
They really dig into that here, but
it's way
almost
better.
Like, yeah, like when you really go for it, like it worked better in this one.
Well, this is like Spike's best episode so far. And it really makes it, they add a million layers of complexity to him.
Yeah.
And we'll get into all that. So how does it begin?
So we're at Spear Sports Industries, and it's a rainstorm.
A lot of these episodes start in a rainstorm.
Yeah, very dramatic opening.
Yeah, very dramatic. All right, go on. Sorry.
So it's, you know, like an industrial factory, warehouse, something. And we see Leech, Callisto, and like a few other Morlocks emerging.
It might be Leech. I couldn't quite tell. Sort of. It's a different take on him.
Okay. Anyway, some Morlocks emerge from a sewer grate. And they go inside the factory and they just start kind of like destroying things in there. A security guard tries to stop them, but one of the Morlocks with the big hand.
This creepy girl. Yeah, she's got a weird doll look to her.
Yeah, but like her power is that woman. She just like touches people and it paralyzes them.
Right, for like a few hours or something.
Yeah, so she does that to this guy, the security guard, and then the Morlocks quietly get away. Fast forward to the next morning, it's daytime at Spear Sports, and the owner is in his, like, executive suit or whatever, is really angry that this keeps happening. So we realize that it's not an isolated incident. They're, like, targeting this factory. He doesn't want to involve the police because they're releasing a new product soon called Power 8. And he...
Which is very confusing because of the real sports drink called Powerade.
I thought they were saying that until I saw it written.
This must have predated Powerade. I doubt they would do a parody of it.
Right.
It feels... I mean, Powerade...
I mean, Gatorade existed, but I think Powerade came out later, didn't it?
I think so. It's hard to say. It seems like it came out around this time.
Right.
Did you ever enjoy Powerade?
Not really.
The only one I ever remember liking, and it was gross in retrospect, is when they had a Ghostbusters flavor. It was just nuclear green. Or maybe it was from there. It was the Matrix. I think they were promoting the Matrix.
Really?
Yeah. And it just reminded me of that Ecto Cooler drink we had as kids.
Did you like how it tasted, actually? Or did you just like that it was like a Ghostbusters throwback?
I don't remember. I just remember getting it. It was like nuclear green colored. It looked like something that should not be consumed by humans.
Uh-huh.
I think I enjoyed that more than the actual flavor of it. This is something I remember from college anyway, so...
I don't know, they're just all so, like, sweet. Like, it's too much. It's...
Do you like Gatorade? Do you ever have a craving for a Gatorade?
No, I only have really had it when I've, like, been sick.
Right.
You know?
You need those electrolytes.
Yeah, that's true. Have you ever tried, I don't know if they sell it here, it's like an East Asian thing, I think, like in Korea and Japan, in all the vending machines, instead of Gatorade and Powerade, they have this drink that's called Pocari Sweat.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it?
Wow.
It's just like Gatorade or Powerade, except it doesn't have the fruit flavor in it. And so it's just kind of like ambiguously salty sweet.
Ugh.
Like,
is it good?
Yeah, it's good. It sounds like it wouldn't be good, but
right,
it's good.
Right, because a drink named Sweat is not...
It's not appetizing, right. I know. But, like, I think the idea is that, like, after you sweat a lot, you're supposed to drink it. So, like,
still,
replenish, but...
That's sort of a cultural translation thing that probably doesn't... It probably doesn't translate well.
Yeah, maybe.
Right.
That I enjoyed. Anyways, so...
So, I mean, in a way, they're certainly establishing a time and a place, because early 2000s, extreme sports drinks...
Yeah.
Those were, like, very prominent. It's interesting to think about the history of beverages in our lifetimes. You know, us, like, being born in the 80s, growing up in the 90s into the 2000s. In the 90s, soda was ubiquitous. It wasn't really necessarily at the time, at least as I can remember, seen as an unhealthy drink.
Mm.
It was exciting when a new flavor came out. And then the world of sugary drinks kept expanding with Snapples when they hit the scene.
Oh, yeah.
And it seemed like, oh, this is a healthier drink. Really, it was just as much sugar as any Coca-Cola you would have.
Right.
And then it's sort of just, like, there's all these other sorts of drinks, like Fuse or, I forget the names of them entirely.
Mondo.
Jolt. Yeah, Mondo, Jolt. All the juice boxes you had as kids. You're just, like, drinking sugary beverages left and right. And then it's like... Towards the 2000s, I think people realized, like, maybe it's not good to be drinking soda all the time.
Uh-huh.
So then you had more of the Gatorades and the Powerades come
like
out.
Pseudo-health.
Right,
stuff.
Yeah. And then and then people realized, like, oh, that's all sugar, too. And it shifted to even more, like, those naked fruit drinks.
Yeah.
That turned out, those are just as bad for you, too, because they're just loaded with sugar.
Right.
And it got to the point, I think, eventually, where people were like, oh, just seltzer water is kind of... That's why now it's, like, at least with our generation, it's like LaCroix... And Spindrifts and just things that just don't have sugar in them, really. And
I don't know. I think, like, there's still a market
where
it's in disguise, like juice bars or, like, you know, smoothie places or
that's
whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it's all the, you know.
I know. People love their sugary drinks, but it the mindset is I just think that I remember as a kid it being perfectly natural. You're on the Little League team or you're doing some kind of sports competition, and after it's over, you rehydrate yourself with a fresh Dr. Pepper. An ice cold Dr. It really hit the spot, and you're like, this is good for me. You just kind of, no
really?
One, adult, I don't know, and I feel like adults didn't care either, the kids were drinking it. I feel
I
like
grew
now.
Up in a different world than you, I guess. We were not allowed to drink soda in my
well,
house.
Yeah, your mom
ever.
Was a little bit different.
She told me I was allergic to Coca-Cola. Have I told this story before?
No, not on the podcast.
She told me I was allergic to Coca-Cola when I was a little kid.
And it was a lie.
Yeah, it turned out to be a lie. When I was a teenager, I finally was like, let me just try and see, and nothing happened. I was like, wow.
And then you couldn't stop drinking Coke. It is a bummer. I mean, I grew up drinking those drinks, and I love the flavor of Coca-Cola. I love, like, a nice Welch's grape soda.
Hmm.
Some of my fondest memories are going to a pizza place at 10 years old and getting a slice and a Welch's grape soda.
Mm-hmm.
And just thinking it was the greatest thing. Root beers and Dr. Peppers. And now those are just not my diet anymore, and I would never really think to buy that. Occasionally, I'll get a Coke if we're out to a restaurant and I want a beer or something. I'll, like, oh, Coke's a nice treat.
Uh-huh.
But...
Wait, you want a beer, so you order a Coke?
No, I'm saying, like, if I'm not getting a beer.
Oh, I see, okay.
If I'm like, I'm not in the mood for drinking alcohol. Like, that's the level of which I'll have a soda.
Uh-huh.
And I know people still obviously drink soda in enormous quantities, but I think culturally, though, I think lots of people... They don't
became
drink...
Became aware of the fact that right. It's actually pretty bad for
you. Yeah, they don't unthinkingly drink them as much as they used to.
Right, yeah.
So I always think about that. Just sort of that evolution of knowledge. Or, like, sort of consumer knowledge about sugary drinks in our lifetimes.
Yeah, well, I think it's like that with the Powerade and the Gatorade, too,
yeah.
Right? Because, like, people would be like, oh, like, I just, you know, ran around a lot. Like, mm-hmm. I got to drink a Gatorade
That's
or something.
Good for you.
That's good for you, right? But then, like... The messaging changed at some point to saying, like, actually, you only need to do that if you're, like, a pro athlete and you're really, like, sweating out all your electrolytes.
Right, yeah. Yeah, if you're playing a 48-minute basketball game or you're running 7 miles or something.
Right, yeah, but... Yeah.
Well, weirdly, I know we're talking a lot about sports drinks here, but that's a big plot of this episode.
Right. So the Power 8 is the product that this company, Spear Sports, is about to launch, and they don't want any kind of bad press associated with the company or their products or anything, so they decide to just keep it under wraps.
And it's not clear why the Morlocks are intent on destroying it.
Yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're at school at Bayville High. And Gene and Scott are, like, running away from Kitty. They don't want her to see them for some reason, which we also don't know yet.
This is the comic relief portion of the episode.
Right.
Which is not too funny. No.
Yeah. Should we just say it all now so we don't have to keep interrupting the story?
Yeah, that's good.
Basically, like, Kitty just got her learner's permit to learn how to drive a car, but she can only practice or get lessons or whatever with people who are 18 and over. So that includes Scott and Gene.
So we learn their ages.
We learn that they're 18.
They're definitely seniors in high school.
Right. And, like, the adults at the X-Mansion. So there's, like, a whole runaround where she's trying to track down Scott and Jean. And, like, Wolverine gets pulled in to be her driving instructor one day, and Scott has to do it one day, and...
The joke is she's a totally reckless driver who uses her phasing powers at times to go through obstacles, sometimes not. And she has no awareness that she's terrible, and no one has the heart to tell her that she's a dangerous driver.
Right.
Which is not my experience learning how to drive. My dad would
berate me. I mean, everyone's a dangerous driver when they first start.
I know, but...
No one's good at it right away. You have to, like, learn how to do it.
Yeah.
But still, they should tell her to be more careful.
Yeah. the most interesting thing is learning the ages of Gene and Scott, at the very least. That they're the oldest and they're 18.
Right. Okay, so that's the Kitty thing that's going to be, like, woven throughout, but we're not going to talk about it anymore. meanwhile...
Let me ask you this. Yeah. I grew up in New Jersey, but what was the permit age in New York? In New Jersey, it was 16.
Yeah, New York was 16.
Okay, so Kitty might be 16 then.
Yeah, probably.
Early 2000s, they're around our ages, so, okay.
Yeah.
So that makes her a...
Sophomore?
Sophomore, or a... Junior.
Maybe a junior, yeah. But probably a sophomore, because I don't know. I feel like they always show that she's really young.
Mm.
Right?
Well, 16, though.
Yeah.
All right, so Kitty's 16. All right. And then presumably that would... I think Nightcrawler's her age, too.
Mm.
And Rogue, we're not sure. She's 17, probably, because Kitty asks her...
Rogue, when do you turn 18?
Right, yeah, so...
Because she wants to go driving with
her. Right, so Rogue... She might be a senior... She might be Scott and Jean's age, too. She maybe just didn't turn 18 yet.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So, meanwhile, in the school, kids are pulling a prank on Spike. When he opens his locker, like, they have a cardboard cutout of him, like, jump out at him.
No, I think it's not of him. It's of a poster of the Power 8 skating contest.
Oh.
And they fill it with spikes.
Got it.
Because they know he's a mutant with spike powers.
That's why they stole that poster. Got it. Okay. And, like, all the kids are mean, and they laugh at him, but one kid is like, oh, like, just ignore them, don't egg them on. Like, he kind of tries to make friends with Spike.
But then he sort of crosses the line immediately. He's like, you're one of those mutants, right? That's cool. I wish I had superpowers. And Spike can tell, like, you're an idiot, you don't understand.
But also, it turns out that the reason this kid is trying to befriend him is because the kid himself is being bullied.
Right.
And he wants Spike to fight his bullies for him.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they kind of trap him into having to do that. Like, these three huge guys are, like, pushing Spike around, and they're like, come on, use your powers, and they won't, like, leave him alone, and Spike obviously can't fight them all off without his powers, so, like, he doesn't kill any of them or anything like that, but he does, like, use some spikes to help him.
And they laid some work in previous episodes showing that Spike is having a harder and harder time retracting his spikes into his skin, that he's having this weird sort of Shelley outbreak either on his spine or his hands.
Right.
And then later in the episode, his head. He just can't retract these spikes anymore, and he's getting a bit more freakish.
Right.
He can't just blend in.
He, like, sort of beats up the kids, and then Kurt's like, right, show's over, because he sees what's going on, and Kurt, like, just teleports him out of there when no one's looking. So Evan's back home, and, like, with great effort, he manages to retract some of the spikes.
But then he notices, he thinks he's got them all, but he looks in the mirror and sees that there's a whole spiny, spine spike thing on his spine.
Right.
Sorry.
A whole spine of spikes.
Right, a whole spine of spikes.
I guess, you know, he goes to sleep, wakes up the next morning, and at breakfast, he's eating breakfast with Berserker.
Right, the electric powers guy. One of the new mutants.
Evan realizes, like, he's also got these spikes on the backs of his hands that he can't retract, like these plates or something. And Berserker says to him, like, hey, aren't you entered in that Power 8 skating competition? It's about to start. And Evan's like, oh, yeah. So, like, they hustle over there. Berserker and who else?
Who's at the contest?
Yeah, in the audience. Like, Storm is there.
Storm,
like,
Nightcrawler.
Yeah. Evan's doing really well with
Gene Scott,
skateboarding. Iceman. This is where they, like, really lean into that skateboarding
thing. You get your extreme sports here.
Extreme sports.
So it's a skateboarding contest. They're on half pipes and doing tricks, ollies and the like.
Right. And Evan's, like, really doing great. He, like, gets off his skateboard for a second and goes to pick up, like, a free Power 8 drink because they're sponsoring the event. And, like, at the second that he's about to drink it, somebody walks by and knocks it out of his hand and kind of says under their breath, oh, that's poison.
Right. That's Callisto, like, who does that, right?
Yeah. Is it? I think so.
Okay.
One of the Morlocks, anyway.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, that was weird. And then he just has to go back into the competition.
It looks like he's going to win. But then another kid who's beaten accuses him of being a mutant, and therefore he must have cheated somehow.
Like, he should be disqualified for being a mutant, basically.
Right, and Evan's trying to defend himself, says, well, I don't have powers that would help me be good at skateboarding. And the referee's like, all right, well, we have to talk about it. We have to consult with the other judges. And Evan's like, no, I know how this conversation's going to go. So he just leaves. And
he picks up a Powerade on his way out.
Right. He drinks it, and it caught, you know, it is poisonous to mutants, we learn.
Right.
So it causes him to throw up a little bit and lose control of his powers. So a whole bunch of spikes go, like, big spikes go flying out of his body in all directions. They shred, like, the enormous scoreboard, the foundations of it, and it starts to fall on the audience.
So Storm has to use her wind powers to, like, hold it up, and, like, the other mutants that are there kind of, like, help get everybody out of the arena so that they're safe.
Nightcrawler rescues a kid falling off the balcony. Iceman ices up the foundation scoreboard to keep it steady. So the X-Men spring into action.
Meanwhile, Evan kind of, like, stumbles out, and the Morlocks grab him.
Yeah, and I like the direction this episode turned, because I thought for sure it was going to be, everyone's going to crowd Evan and blame him for attacking the audience.
I thought that's exactly
what happened. And I was happy that didn't go in that direction, because that seemed very predictable, and this is where the episode gets really good, in my opinion.
Yes, definitely. Back at the X-Mansion in the lab, Professor X... I guess the X-Mansion is totally rebuilt, right?
Yeah, looks like it.
Professor X and Beast are running some experiments on Power 8, and they're, like, dripping it into test tubes and stuff, and they realize that it's only reactive with mutant DNA. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, so it's for whatever it is, this sports guy... I mean, I know there's a bunch of weird chemicals in all sorts of mass-produced products, but really, like, what are the chemicals in a Powerade or a Gatorade? It's, like, sugar, water, and a bunch of food coloring dyes.
Electrolytes.
Salts and things. So the idea that he's somehow created a sports drink that's got, like, that would literally poison a population group of humans in the world is quite insane.
Right.
Just alter the formula, you know what I mean? Like...
Right, yeah.
Although we'll see
that. Well, more on that later.
Right.
So the Morlocks took Evan in because they don't think that he's going to be accepted, quote-unquote, topside, with the spikes and plates and stuff growing all over him. And Callisto basically wanted to help him by bringing him down there.
This is sort of... It's a different take on the Morlocks, but very similar to the original series. And I like it. It's a bit more down-to-earth.
Yeah, I like it, too.
The Morlocks are a bit more...
They have a little more agency in this, I think.
Yeah, a bit more agency, a bit more just... They're not as... the Morlocks in the original series were kind of nutty.
Mm.
They're a little insane at times.
Yeah. Here it's like they really have clear, like, goals and means to reach them.
Right.
Which is, like, a little different. But the Morlocks want Evan to help them basically, like, take down the Spear Sports Industries place.
They explain that the drink poisons mutants, and that all the runoff of the plant has been poisoning the sewer in which they live in.
Right. So I was wondering, why don't they live in a different sewer, maybe?
Well, I mean, if Powerade's going to be this drink that's going to be all over the world.
I mean, the factories are going to be everywhere.
Yeah, but... I mean, saying like someone should just move if they live in a shitty area is not
you're right.
something that you could really suggest to people. There's reasons why people can't move. You know, so the Morlocks, it's their home. They have to, they're trying to protect their home.
Okay. Berserker shows up in the sewer looking for Spike.
Again, like they did some good groundwork in a previous episode showing that Berserker is kind of friends with the Morlocks.
Right.
He knows who they are.
Right. The little girl paralyzes him so that he can't go back to the X-Men and tell them where Spike is. But the paralysis wears off pretty quickly, and he calls up Professor X and tells them that Spike is there with the Morlocks and what the plan is and stuff. And at this point, the Morlocks and Spike are inside the plant. I don't know what their plan was exactly.
They're trying to
destroy
just blow up the plant.
So Berserker goes in there, and he does essentially blow up the plant.
Berserker does?
Doesn't he? Like with the electric wires?
You're right. It's a little unclear. Like, the Morlocks go into the plant. They freeze the security guards again. They have Spike's help. They damage the production facility.
One way or another, the plant, like, all the vats of liquid start falling over and, like, it's being destroyed again.
It's falling into the sewers, which is still a big problem for the Morlocks, but...
Right, but they manage to escape through the sewers. They run fast enough to outrun all the liquids. Spike helps them get out. By this point, the X-Men have arrived because they got Berserker's message.
And they know what's happening. And Storm helps by causing a rainstorm to dilute the poison in the sewers.
Right. So meanwhile, the Morlocks get away with Evan. And the X-Men don't know where they went.
Right. And so now this is a good scene because the X-Men are like, they're not just going to let him go like they have with some other mutants.
Right.
They're like, he is Storm's nephew. So Storm's freaked out. They're searching the sewers for hours,
right,
trying to find him desperately. And then they come across him.
Storm finally finds him, right. Yeah.
And Spike is covered in spikes now. He can't really retreat them into his body. And he bids his farewell. He's like, Storm, like, I just can't. I've changed, and I need to work through some stuff. The Morlocks are my friends.
Storm's like, that's what we're about, the X-Men. Like, come back with us, like, come home, let us help you.
Storm can convince Morlocks to move into the X-Mansion. That's what we've learned now across two series.
That's right.
They have no interest in living in that place. They just want to live in the sewer.
Right. But Evan's like, you know what, I just need a break from everything. Like, between what's going on at school and the skateboarding and all his spikes growing out of his body, he feels like he just wants to lay low for a little bit.
It's one thing for him to drop out of school, which he's threatened to do in the past. Now he's just dropping out of society entirely.
Right.
Storm's a bit aghast here.
Yeah. But, you know, he walks off into the sewer
mist.
Waterfall mist,
yeah,
with the Morlocks, so...
There's not much you could do. I'm sort of surprised. I feel like if there's any time to...
Is he written off the show, you think?
I think we see him again.
Okay, yeah.
I bet he rejoins the X-Men for sure.
Meanwhile,
I'm curious to see if he comes back and just has to live with the spikes. Like, that's what he looks like.
Right.
I don't know.
I mean, he looks awesome. Like,
yeah,
the way they drew the spikes on him,
yeah,
it's almost like a dinosaur.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yep.
All right.
But this wouldn't be X-Men Evolution if we didn't get one scene with Professor X being completely stupid.
Which is exactly what's about to happen. Professor X goes to the factory during the day and meets with the owner, the executive guy that we saw before. And the executive is saying, like, oh, like, we had no idea that liquid was so dangerous to mutants. Like, thanks for telling me.
I'll just change the formula. I don't want to poison anyone.
And Professor X is like, okay, I believe you.
And I was like, oh, that's an interesting scene. The guy, he's not a predictable villain. He's just, he's just trying to do, like, his own business and have, like, a nice sports drink to compete with the Gatorade people. But no, Professor X leaves, and the guy... says,
he gets on the phone and he's like, I want production back up and running as soon as possible. I now realize how valuable Power 8 really
right.
is going to
so
be.
Right, so now he's going to be a genocidal maniac.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Right, so Professor X not being able to sense something amiss with this man who is in control of a very powerful formula that could wipe out the mutant race.
Yeah.
Is a big L for the professor and a long series of L's on the show. Wolverine, oh, we said we wouldn't mention the driving. Wolverine gets his revenge on Professor X by saddling him with Kitty, by making Kitty the personal chauffeur of the professor at the very end.
Is that to imply that Wolverine is usually the professor's personal chauffeur?
I thought it was Storm at times.
Huh.
We've seen Storm drive. I guess both
Maybe
of them
they
take turns driving
adults.
Him around.
It is like 1930s town car.
Yeah. quite ridiculous. Yeah, so a good episode, though. I mean, like, Spike's not a character I've enjoyed on the show, but now I enjoy him.
Yeah, I mean, the skateboarding thing also I always thought was kind of like, outside of my interest range, I don't know. But, like, in this episode, they really made it make sense. They tied everything together about, like, his interests and personality that they've shown us so far.
I mean, good. Spike joining the Morlocks is just a plot twist I did not envision. And, again, like, when I saw the title of this episode and saw the brief description, Spike enters a skateboarding contest, I thought the whole dumb thing was going to be, like we said, the turning point where he accidentally destroys the stadium, or the audience where the people are sitting.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's going to be this stupid thing where he gets blame and he's maybe gets to re-enter the contest and prove himself, like, something stupid about winning the contest.
Went a much more interesting direction.
Very interesting. So, two really good episodes in a row.
Yeah.
Last week's was really good with Cyclops lost in the Mexican desert.
Right.
And this one, Spike joining the Morlocks in the underground sewers. So I'm excited to see where this is only episode 6 of season 3, so a lot more episodes to go. So far, really good.
Mm-hmm.
A weird little fun fact I noticed, we talked about last week that Avengers show, which is quite good, that cartoon, or Smize Heroes, is on Disney Plus 2 for around 2010. The main creative producer on that show is this man named Christopher Yost, Y-O-S-T. And I said, I know that name, I've seen it before. And so I looked him up on IMDb, and he did a lot of episodes of X-Men Evolution 2, and I think he starts in season 3.
Oh.
I don't think we've gotten to his episodes yet, but I was like, oh, wow, that's cool, because Avengers is written very well,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that he worked on Evolution is interesting. So I'm going to try to look out for the Christopher Yost episodes. Maybe there's some of the better ones. And it's interesting about that guy, too. He helped write Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, really?
He was one of the part of that Marvel bullpen of writers they have to
cool.
go in there. You know, they sort of write those movies by committee. I know they've got, like, their main writers, but they rely on a lot of their sort of internal talent to clean up scripts and make them more Marvel-y and sort of consistent in their own universe.
Hmm.
So, yeah, Christopher Yost, I don't know if that name rings a bell to you folks out there as well. I was surprised to see he's part of the show as well, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, cool.
So, yeah, so I was excited about this one. Is there anything else you wanted to say before we wrap it up here?
That's all.
All right, good night, everybody.
Good night. We'll be right back.